Hey everyone, John here. This is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. I am solo for the first time in a while, but I am solo for a specific reason. Wes and Ryan and I will be back together in just a couple of days to do a recording of a mini show, but I have a lot of games that I have been playing through and finishing off recently, so I wanted to clear the deck except for like the most important ones so that we can have a nice roundtable discussion and not me monologuing for the other two while we're doing the show. So I'm going to monologue for you right now with some games that I've been playing, and we'll all be back together for a show with three of us that's not just me talking the whole time. So these are all games. Some of them are newer releases. I am basically going to try to clear the deck of everything that I've been playing except for Xenoblade Chronicles. I'm going to save that one for when me and Wes and Ryan are back together so me and Wes can have a nice discussion because he's been playing that one as well. So let's get things started. I picked up a couple of games on a deep discount a couple of weeks ago, and now I have played through the both of them. I picked up Echo. This one is spelled E-Q-Q-O. I picked this one, I think it was down to a buck when I bought it. Not sure if it's still on that deep of a discount, but it doesn't matter because this game is not one that I'm recommending. So just to give the 30,000 foot view, it's sort of a point and click adventure. It's a cell phone game. It's a game for Android that got brought over to Switch. And you can definitely see the mobile phone roots all over this game. Like the DNA is pervasive. They didn't do much to change it to bring it to a home console or even a handheld system, because the way that you are viewing your environments is a lot of like sliding around as if on a touchscreen, but they give you like this hand or mouse interface if you're on a PC to kind of click and drag around to look at the different environments. And basically some of the stuff is kind of pixel hunty. You have to find the thing that you need to click on to proceed. But it's kind of like if you think of like a crossbreed between something like a Myst and Eco for the PS2, because a lot of the puzzles are just kind of traversal based. You have to figure out how to navigate the environments rather than solving a lot of logic puzzles. So the biggest problem that I had with this game right from the start was that there are puzzles or traversal challenges that are contingent on your perspective. And sometimes like changing your perspective, like actually changing the position of where the camera would be if you were watching a movie or a TV show, depends on you finding the one that's like it's a little white dot. It's supposed to be like a star within the game, and clicking on that so you can get a different perspective. And when you find like all the different perspectives in a given puzzle area, like an arena or a room, you can then just kind of cycle between them using the shoulder buttons, which I guess is a nice little update for a home console or a handheld unit, because you wouldn't have that those buttons you could use on a cell phone. So The other, I didn't like the way that, you know, sometimes you think you might know what to do, or maybe you don't have just the view in order that you need in order to get the perspective on the thing that you need to do. And it's really just dependent on you being like looking at the right part of the screen in order to find the thing that changes your perspective. I also, you know, when playing through the game, you know, when you think of something like Eco or maybe like Shadow of the Colossus to an extent, you have this sort of progression, this sort of ramping up of the sort of a traversal puzzles that you are trying to accomplish to get to the end of the game. And Echo doesn't really have that. The things that it is asking you to do at the beginning of the game are nearly identical to the things it's asking you to do at the end. It doesn't really grow or evolve. This is definitely a game where they were very impressed with this narrative that they are telling. It's very self-important and self-serious, the way that they're presenting the story that it's telling. And I wasn't all that interested, as I typically am not interested in narratives of video games. I was more interested and the puzzles that they were presenting me. And by the end of the game, it was definitely clear that they were never going to present me with anything novel as far as the traversal puzzles were concerned. So, you know, they do have some different environments. There's like outside and then inside this castle or fortress, and you go to a sewer because of course you do. So you know there are almost like boss challenges, boss gates in between each chapter. There's only five chapters, so it's mercifully short. And like I said at the start, this is not a game that I would recommend. It's not totally devoid of value. I think that, you know, it does have some nice stuff to look at. It does have a couple of clever puzzles in there. But overall, I think like the most positive thing I could say about this game is it doesn't overstay its welcome, because, you know, when it really starts to look like the game is just going to never offer you something new, it's over. So at least there's that, I suppose. Pass on this one. Another one that I picked up on deep discount a couple weeks ago is called The Way Remastered. And this was a game available on other systems. I'm not sure when exactly it came to Switch. I think it was last year or maybe even 2018, even. But this one is like kind of an adjacent genre. It doesn't like Echo. It's like a point-and-click adventure, except this one takes the form of a 2D side-scroller. So, and rather like similar to Echo, rather than it being like something that's logic-based, like trying to solve these logic puzzles, it's more about managing, like traversing an environment and overcoming obstacles in order to, you know, get to the next checkpoint that will allow you to activate the thing. And it's got a little bit of Metroid in there as well, because like the first major area that you go to, it's this interconnected sort of a security base, and you're having to go to different parts of the base that will grant you access to other parts, and you have to backtrack and grab an item and move back the other way. So I really dug that first part of it. I was really into it. And I've gone a little bit further, and so far nothing has really replicated that sort of Metroid-like experience, the sort of light Metroid experience of the first area of the game. But I'm still very positive on it, because it does offer you some cool platform challenges and some cool like puzzle challenges as far as, you know, how to manipulate your environment in order to get through it. Again, similar to something like an Eco, where, you know, you're not like doing a ton of slide puzzles or, you know, trick math equations and shit like that in order to, you know, unlock the door. It's more about, okay, how do I get around this thing? How do I use my environment to get the thing out of the way? That sort of thing. And The Way Remastered also looks really, really nice. It is, you know, not a 16-bit, maybe more like a 32-bit is a better way of describing it. A side-scroller has a very naturalistic environments, as in something like a Hyper Light Drifter, which is a game that we draw a lot of artistic allusions to quite often. But very vibrant colors and environments when it shows you those things. And it also has a more dreary or mechanical areas as well. So you get a nice contrast there. But really impressive vistas. I'm digging this one so far. I'm not done with it yet. I'm maybe 15% of the way through. But yeah, this one definitely gets a recommend based on what I've played so far. So next up, I cleared off a couple of the Mega Man Zero ZX Legacy Collection games. I finished off Mega Man Zero 4, and I think the biggest conclusion that I can draw about the Mega Man Zero games for the GBA is that they were definitely still operating from a design standpoint of the designers were making a game that was intended to be played in short bursts and over again. You, of course, see this a lot on the original Game Boy and Game Boy Color, because you couldn't fit that large of a game on the size of the cartridges. So what you ended up having was a game that took you an hour or two, and then you would just replay it. You see a lot with like Kirby and like the Mario platformers. I think the more substantial games, you know, you get with Link's Awakening and Pokemon, so you know it did have that mix in there, but the vast majority of games were just intended for like those short bursts of play, or you could finish something off on a long car ride and then have it again for you. So the Game Boy Advance was of course capable of much more than the original Game Boy, and you saw that a lot with
the amount of like Super Nintendo games that were ported over, you could get much more substantial experiences with the Game Boy Advance than you could with the Game Boy. But Mega Man Zero as a series is still operating from that philosophy of this is a shorter game, as a lot of Mega Man games are. So what we're going to do is we're going to incentivize replay. And what they did to incentivize replay is they had a lot of your power-ups and your money able to carry over to a new playthrough. So you get this new game plus. But they built the game intentionally so that you were having to replay multiple times in order to just have the resources to get all of these power-ups. So what started out with this really brutal experience the first time through is going to get easier multiple playthroughs, not only because, you know, you're developing your skills with the game and you're developing, you know, a sort of rapport with the boss fights in the game, but also you're just able to buy more health and better upgrades for your character and sub-tanks. So you're just making yourself bulkier. And by the time you get to Mega Man Zero 4, there's still that in there, but it's definitely to a lesser extent than the other games. You know, you still have to, like, any of the Mega Man Zero games, if you want to have all or most of your upgrades by the end, you have to find spots to grind for cash. And sometimes there's convenient ones. Mega Man Zero 4 does have a very convenient one, but it's still taking you a good 30, 45 minutes of just pure grinding to get the cash that you need in order to do a substantial amount of upgrades. So Mega Man Zero 4, then it like counteracts that as well. Like, you're able to get the resources you need, but what'll end up happening is It sort of penalizes you for giving yourselves all the upgrades that you can then afford. So by defeating a boss, you get like permission. You get to, you unlock the ability to give yourself an upgrade in some way, like upgrading your HP or giving yourself an upgrade that like just lets your character move faster. And what it does is like it gives you like something in your bank to where you can use one. You can sort of over budget. You can give yourselves more upgrades than you've technically unlocked, but that will affect your score. And your getting a worse score will then prevent you from unlocking like upgrades to your weapons or to like your body armor, that kind of thing. Sort of like put elemental alignment on yourself. Kind of like stealing Robot Master powers in the core Mega Man series, the Mega Man X series. You're not able to do those sort of things if you are performing poorly or giving yourself so many upgrades that you're docking your score at the end of a stage. So, you know, if you're still just trying to collect everything, it's still requiring multiple playthroughs, which, you know, it is not something that they really needed to do on the Game Boy Advance. Like, there's the space available, there is the resource available to where they could have made a more substantial game, but they're just kind of still operating within the same philosophy as, you know, the older games. Like, even like Mega Man X games on the Super Nintendo and the PS1, you're still like getting a more substantial experience in terms of like just like the amount of game there was to play and the amount of upgrades that you could seek out and find. Like, not things that you had to buy, but things you actually had to like explore, like engage with the game in order to obtain. So, you know, Mega Man Zero, like, they're not bad games by any means. Like, of course, like the combat is refined. The boss fights are intricate and require a lot of memorization to like recognize their patterns. Maybe not like mechanical memorization, but like being able to like have that recognition to what they're going to do and know what you have to do in order to counteract their actions and expose their weaknesses like that. So, and they're nice looking games as well. But as far as like the sort of, I don't know, the old like scoring metric that a lot of outlets used to use, the sort of like replayability or longevity of the game is lacking in a way, and intentionally so. Like, this wasn't like something that, you know, they just couldn't cram it all onto the space that they had. Like they chose to use resources to make like cutscenes and anime like still images and even some light motion stuff in there. So you know, these games are interesting artifacts of the Game Boy Advance in that they're sort of still like these holdovers from an earlier design philosophy of other handheld games. So I think that they are well worth a playthrough. Because there are so many of them, I don't think I'll ever, at least in the near future, replay any of them, which is what the game kind of wants you to do, is it wants you to engage with it over and over again. So as you know, as games like you were playing back in the original Game Boy Advance when, you know, you couldn't afford that many games, that probably had some value. But now when you want to just engage with a game and like kind of like be able to pick it apart and really understand it your first time through, these aren't the sort of games that accomplish that all that well. I think these games are better suited for something like this collection, where you're able to give yourself these checkpoints before bosses, so that you're not just like pounding your head against the wall, replaying the same levels over and over again with your limited lives. Now, Mega Man ZX, on the other hand, really takes a leap forward on the DS to modernize the sort of gameplay ideas of Mega Man Zero. So Mega Man ZX, it was an earlier DS game, not super early in the DS lifecycle, because by that point, Capcom wasn't really messing around with too many like touchscreen gimmicks. It was more like, here's your bottom screen, it is going to be a map. And it's not a little bit of a disclaimer there, it's not always a map, it depends on like what suit you are wearing. So a lot like Mega Man Zero, you know, you have like your Zero design with, you know, the scarf and whatever, and like the red suit and the helmet, and you have your saber and your buster gun at your disposal throughout most of the game. But what Mega Man ZX was doing, as you might be able to tell from the name, was sort of merging the ideas of Mega Man Zero and Mega Man X. So Mega Man, like in Mega Man Zero, you have like a lot of your close combat, your buster, gun, but your saber is going to be, you know, your primary way of dealing out damage, even though, you know, your buster, you can charge up and deal out quite a bit of damage that way. But most of the time, the way you're engaging enemies, especially like your little grunts through level, is going to be with your saber in close combat. And, you know, a lot like a Mega Man Zero as well, you do get the different suits that you're putting on, like your H model and your, I think it's like your F model and P and L model, I think. No, I'm not so sure now that I'm saying it out loud. But, you know, they're going to give you different weapons to deal with. They're also going to give you different abilities. Your H model, your green guy, is going to let you get an air dash. Your blue guy is going to allow you to move around in water in multiple directions. And they're also going to give you like little screens, like little maps on your bottom screen. So like your P model, which is kind of like your a ninja character throws like these shuriken dart things, is going to give you just like a map on your bottom screen that will also point out where hidden rooms are. So you know, there are a couple of points throughout the game where you have just invisible doors or walls that you're able to walk through, that kind of thing. And for upgrades and power-ups and things like that, and this will point them out to you. So you know, it is to your advantage from time to time to switch over to that thing and just poke around. But going with like the Mega Man X sort of design ideas is that instead of like buying your upgrades, there are a lot of things like your energy tanks and your sub tanks, your life expansions. These are all things that you find in levels. They're hidden away. Upgrades for things. But having that that air dash gives you a lot more mobility because, you know, you can dash on the ground, jump at the end of your dash to give you some speed in the air, and then use the air dash to keep your momentum going forward. So, you know, you're able to cover ground a lot more quickly, which is something that you're going to have to do because the game also does have side missions, just kind of like fetch quests that you do for NPCs throughout the game, like go to this area, find the thing, bring it back to me. There's a lot of that going on. That's a way of earning extra cash that you need to continue to repair your biometals, your different models, your robot master powers in the game. So I enjoyed my time with Mega Man ZX a whole lot more than I did with any of the Mega Man Zero games. It feels, you know, next gen compared to the Zero games. It feels like it was more of a leap forward in terms of design and just overall intuitive playability. So definitely worth the price of admission for that one. I'm looking forward to getting to ZX Advent, which I'll do in a few weeks here, and that will wrap up the Zero Collection games that comes on that little cart. So looking forward to wrapping that one up, and looking forward to, you know, I played ZX on the DS originally. I never played ZX Advent, but I've heard that they solved a lot of the map issues, so I'm hoping that is the case, and that, you know, it's, I'm totally fine if it's a lot like ZX, except with a better map. That sounds just fine to me. And then lastly, to wrap up here, I finished off Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which is a game that I can definitely give the thumbs up recommendation to. I thought it was a very fun little Metroid-like game. I think that I finished with 68%, so, you know, not a very high percentage, but there are things in the game that are just kind of hidden in, I guess, a sort of obtuse way. So you eventually get a power up that allows you to just kind of do an earthquake on a screen, and there are collectibles that you will only get if you do that earthquake in an otherwise inconspicuous area. And I found one of them because I couldn't be bothered to like make my round through the entire map again and just use this thing in random places. But I found one of them because it just got to a dead end, and I'd been there a couple of times before. I was like, there's nothing here. I wonder what happens if I just do an earthquake. And then one popped up. Now, I couldn't remember if there were any other sort of conspicuous areas like that, but like something like a map marker is something that I never found in the game. I don't think it's there. Maybe it is. I just didn't press the right button or something. But something like that to sort of give yourself a reminder to like, hey, I've been here before, but I couldn't find anything. Maybe there's something later would have been really useful. And I think some of the completion percentage might have also been tied to these little card collectibles that I would never have bothered collecting them all because it works a little bit like, you know, Castlevania, Aria of Sorrow, or Dawn of Sorrow, or Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, where enemies will give you just these random drops of, you know, a little image of them in card form that, you know, will give you a little power up, like, you know, your wall climbing speed is faster when you're a lizard, that kind of thing. So, you know, I talked about this game one in, you know, not great length on a previous show, but I did want to mention again that I thought they handled the transformations to all your different animal forms really well. So in a lot of Shantae games and all of them that I can think of, you have transformations into animals that will give you like different abilities. Like it kind of works like, you know, your morph ball in certain ways in Metroid. So, you know, you'll transform into a mouse that, you know, makes you smaller so you can fit into smaller areas. Or I think I might be thinking of one of those Dragon games, Monster Boy games, Curse of the Dragon. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But it's similar to that idea where you take on, or like where you turn into a bat that allows you to fly over long gaps. So, and in most of these Shantae games, you are transforming into these animals through like a sort of like series of menus. So you're like holding down a button, and then it's like sort of, you have to let it basically charge up to expose the menu, like the quick ring menu that you want to switch to. And then sometimes there's so many transformations that, you know, you have to let it continue to charge up, and then the next menu will pop up. So what they did in Seven Sirens is they made it more context sensitive. If you cling onto a wall, you'll automatically change to the lizard so you can climb it. If you are in water, you know, she's like, push the directional button the way you want to go, and you'll transform into the creature that allows you to swim around. So it's much easier to use that way. And then, like, they give you like those extra powers that, you know, you do have to have that, like, that button to hold down to bring up the menu, but like it's things that are much less necessary for just your standard traversal. So it makes just moving around in the world much more snappy. The things you have to do, like, in your charge up menu is things that will make, like, invisible things visible, or that earthquake power that I mentioned. So not things that you're going to use if you're just trying to get from point A to point B really quickly. So much friendlier in that case. Definitely a smart upgrade in that arena. So the game looks really nice. I think it has a really nice, vibrant, colorful art style to it. It's got a nice sound to it as well. Like, this is a well-polished package. I think that all of the platforming was pretty solid. Most of the dungeons in the game, it does have like Metroid-style dungeons in there as well. Most of them are pretty solid. There are three basically heart pieces in each one that, you know, you can collect, and they'll tell you if you've gotten them all, which is nice that, you know, they'll give you like the check mark if, you know, you've gotten all the collectibles in a particular dungeon, so you don't have to go back. Some of the way you get them can be head scratchers at times, but nothing super challenging. You know, the dungeons don't really get all that intricate. They're all pretty straightforward. Like, the game as a whole doesn't achieve the level of intricacy of something like, you know, most Metroid games. You know, I'd probably put on the same level as like a Zero Mission, which is a very good Metroid game. So, but, you know, you're not getting the same sort of a level of intricacy as you would out of something like a Super Metroid or a Metroid Prime. But, you know, overall, like, this is a nice, snappy Metroid experience. Definitely one of the good ones on Switch, and it definitely gets a recommend. So that is going to wrap up my monologue for the night. In a couple of days, me and Wes and Ryan will all be back together, and we'll be talking about a bunch more games and, you know, whatever other topic we want to discuss, because it'll just be an open floor. Me and Wes are definitely going to talk about some Xenoblade, and he's also been playing Rad, that Double Fine game from almost a year ago, which is cool that he picked that one up. I'm looking forward to getting his thoughts on that one. And I also want to talk about The Watchmen, the HBO series, which I've been watching the past few nights, and I'm really liking it. I think it is really, really good. So I'm not sure what Ryan's got, but I'm sure he'll have something interesting to bring to the table, and we'll have a good time with it. So, till next time, everybody. Thank you.